Bavick suggests, and I really like this quote. I got a lot of good ideas from this. So he says, the possibility of sinning is from God. The idea of sin was first conceived in his mind. God eternally conceived sin in his absolute polar opposite, and thus, in that sense, included it in his decree, or else it would never have been able to arise and exist in reality. That's the necessaryness of that idea. Mm-hmm. It flows from what's been presented of God in this perspective. It was not Satan, it wasn't Adam and Eve, who first conceived the idea of sin. God himself, as it were, made it visible to their eyes by means of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil and the probationary command. He clearly showed human beings the two roads that they could take. And before the fall, he even permitted an evil power from without to insinuate itself into paradise. This is, of course, Satan, mm-hmm. using the snake as the medium and to discuss with Eve the meaning and of the probationary command. There is therefore no doubt that God willed the possibility of sin. So again, this is not something outside of God that enters in. This wasn't an unknown quality. This is what he wanted and used and was able to bring about. And again, when we talk about author, go back to that idea of how we think about authorship. So God is not the one doing the sin. He's the one that's decreeing it.
Exactly. It's different. And so he says, when Bavnik is talks about God, you know, will the possibility of sin, he thinks that Bavnik is still being too cautious here, right? Right. God did not merely will the possibility of sin. Right. He willed its eventuality, right? And so there are several things to note about this condition that he wants us to be aware of, that God set forth to ensure that the fall would take place, right? What did God do to ensure that his decrees would be carried out? Well, first, he placed the tree of the knowledge of good and evil in the midst of the garden, testing our first parents with the, you know, probationary command. So that was kind of, you know, I mean,
just remove it.
Yeah, right.
Sin is solved. Don't make the decree.
He says there's nothing, you know, that suggests the tree was inherently evil, right? Yeah. That it would defy the goodness of God's creation. But why place the tree there? Why not make every tree, you know, freely edible without consequences? Mm-hmm. Well, clearly God was setting something up here, right?
Right, right. So this isn't a surprise. This is something that God seems to have premeditated.
Yeah.
The second, God could have easily prevented the serpent from slithering into the garden to tempt Adam and Eve, or walking. Yeah. Slithering came later. Yeah. After all, he later set cherubim in place to prevent the first couple from re-entering the garden after they had sinned. Why not cut off temptation at the pass? Mm. While we cannot speculate about the secret counsels of God, one wonders whether an undisclosed conversation ensued between God and Satan, such as occurred concerning Job. You know, Satan entered into it and said,
God said, look at my perfect creation. Yeah. Adam and Eve, yeah. Right? And Satan says, well, I can make them sin.
And God says, yes, you can. Go
for it.
Yeah. In which God initiated the calamity that befell the righteous man through the evil machinations of Satan.
Right. So God didn't have to put the tree there. He could have prevented the serpent from coming in. Third, God could have constituted man with a nature that precluded the possibility of sinning, right? The sort of nature that, you know, we'll have in our glorified state in heaven, right? We are, once we're glorified, we then don't sin anymore, right? Mm-hmm. We're changed, we're glorified, we're different creatures, well, right?
And we're a people group saved by God's adding to us his righteousness. It's not something that's inherently in us that we're able to be saved and perfected. God has to enter our hearts. He has to change it. And he has to set his spirit in us. So he's doing a more powerful work than us just being good throughout, you know, all of humanity's history. He's even more glorified in this because he's taking something broken and reforming it. And made it better. He's taking a people group following our father Satan and adopting us as sons and daughters so that we can call Christ our first born brother. Mm. I mean, that's an amazing thing. That's an even greater work than just We didn't eat from the tree. All right. Good job, guys.
Yeah, way to go.
Yeah, hit the showers.
He says in Augustinian language, we would say that humans will be fully redeemed and glorified creatures who are not able to sin ever again, right? And so he says it would appear from these facts alone, right? The fact that here's the tree, don't eat of it, right? And here's the snake. Well, actually, don't listen to him. Or, you know, I made you perfect. You can't sin. No, God didn't do any of that stuff, right? No,
it would have been.
Yeah,
There's nothing that necessitates that he had to not do that.
Right. And so he says it would appear from these facts alone that God deliberately intended the fall to take place, right? But he says, does this then mean that he has he was a direct cause of the first sin, right?
Well, what we can say with confidence is this: what Adam and Eve did, they did of their own accord, willingly and uncompelled by God or Satan, such that they alone are to be blamed for their actions. God is not shoveling the fruit into their mouth. Satan is not is not whipping it in with his tail and like, I got you. You accidentally ate it and you woke up and all of a sudden you realized you were naked. No. They did it of their own accord. They alone are to be blamed for their actions. God did not infuse them with evil thoughts and desires or with an evil will. That would be God kind of willing that evil then. And here we must return to Augustine's insight that we should not look for an efficient cause of evil. It has a deficient cause, and that is like trying to see darkness or to hear silence.
Right. So here it's like, you know, the sun illustration that we saw from Jonathan Edwards, right? The sun doesn't cause the darkness, right? It's darkness is a deficiency. It happens when the sun is not there, right? The sun, the efficient effect of the sun is light and warmth, not darkness and cold, right? And so that's what he's getting at here, right?
This is nonetheless God determined Adam and Eve to fall. Thus, we cannot avoid crossing over the inscrutable nether regions here. Indeed, no theological persuasion can avoid the inscrutable realities at this point. At its core, sin is inexplicable.
And that kind of is how he attempts to solve this, right? He says, basically, and of course, we all know this in our hearts, that sin is inexplicable. I mean, it's ridiculous. I mean, why would we sin against a perfect, loving God, right? It just doesn't make sense. God is after our best interests. He knows our best interests. And so why in the world would we go against that? That's inexplainable, right? Why we would do something like that. And so, you know, that's how he lands with regard to this particular problem about Adam and Eve's sin, right? Yes, it's inexplicable why they would do something like this, you know. So what he's done here is he said, look, sin comes from an evil heart. It's a result of our desires, right, our intentions. That's where sin comes from. But ultimately, sin is inexplicable. And we can see this in Adam and Eve because they didn't initially have the evil heart, right? And yet they did sin, right? And so he says it's, you know, there's no way to explain it, right?